You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to a special panel discussion podcast ahead of the upcoming Guinness Women's Six Nations Championship. In recent years, the RFU's management of the women's game in Ireland has been cause for immense but deserved criticism. After a wooden spoon finish 12 months ago, has enough been done to signal improvement from the top to bottom, or should we remain patient in hope rather than expectation? Join me tonight to discuss the entire landscape on the island, our podcast regulars, in Dolphin RFC player Aoife O'Callaghan and Skerry's underage coach Tom Coleman. So welcome back on, folks.
Thanks for having us. Good to be back.
Yeah, good. Same as that. Yeah, thanks to have inviting us, Caelan.
It's always good to have you on and to get your, I suppose, first-hand experience, which I felt was going to be important in something like this. There's no point in me trying to override it when I don't know the full structures. But we'll begin with the upcoming Six Nations because that's just around the corner, just this weekend now. And Aoife, I'll start with yourself. Just on the overall scheme of things, where do you sit on the current state of the game here in Ireland?
Like, it's a really tough one because I think they're trying to make an effort to get somewhere with it because it needs to happen now, or I hate to say it's not going to happen at all, but like, moves need to start being made. And I know they're still in that period of trying to figure out what works for them and how they're going to try and create their own sort of system. Like, I know we've had a couple of contracts kind of coming in and some took them, some didn't take them. And, you know, it's still trying to beef up like the AIL and trying to figure that out. So I think we're still in that period of, we don't really know what we're doing, but we're trying to get somewhere, but we're not going anywhere kind of fast, I feel like, at the moment. And I know it can be a slow progress, but at the same time, I think, do the IRFU need to have a sit down and a proper look at the state of things and be like, oh, we can't put these women into the exact same thing we've done with the men's? Like, do we need to come up with a whole new system for them? And then it's like, do we have enough people within the IRFU that have the knowledge of this is what the women should need, you know, and how we're going to bolster that instead of just looking at it from, like, I suppose, nearly a commercial point and being like, oh yeah, we'll just look, it's the AIL and look, we'll figure out some interpros thing and we figure out some way of creating a URC sort of thing. And but that mightn't work, you know. So it's, I suppose, we're still trying to figure out what works for us, and it's getting the right people, I think, now into the IRFU to kind of give them a bit of a kick and say, like, you have to sort it. You can't have people playing hoping to make Irish teams for them to make those Irish teams and it to kind of go nowhere afterwards, you know. So, like, I know we've come out of this golden era where everything worked out and it was all great. We were beating New Zealand, we were winning Grand Slams, it was all great. But it's a new era now, and I suppose we need to kind of get with the times, you know. And I suppose that does take patience, but at the same time, we need to get a move on.
Absolutely. And you mentioned there the finding kind of the structure that works. And for anyone who may not have caught it yet, I do recommend checking out the interview with Anna Kappas that I did yesterday. Phenomenal. And she's so open, and she talked about how she feels the AIL was the right structure. That's what we should have built on. You ask other people, they might say a URC type thing or a Celtic Challenge type thing is the way to go. Everyone has their own opinions, but it is about trying to find what works best for us, because as much as, you know, keeping in limbo with the Scots and with the Welsh is important. We have to figure out our own situation first. We have to get our own house in order first. But Tom, before we move on, we'll talk about Celtic Challenge, WXV, Sevens, underage rugby, the whole lot. But I just want to get your opinion on the state of the game here as well.
Yeah, I suppose echoing what Aoife said, I suppose the women's international team is sort of that purple patch, sort of, late noughties up to sort of 2013, 2014, 15, and they won a couple of championships and there was a slam in the middle of it there. And if that was the pinnacle, I think it's fair to say the last maybe coming out of COVID, that period, was sort of the bottom. And a lot of people focus on the pitch, the results on the pitch of the international team as the barometer for how the game is going. And I think that's fair. But I also think it's very unfair to the women that play in the Munster League with, Division One, Division Two, or in Leinster or in Ulster or Connacht week in, week out for Aoife's own club, Dolphin or Balbriggan or Dundalk or whoever they're playing. Who's putting as much effort in as their male counterpart. So I'm always reluctant to be overly critical of how things are going, but in the sense of the international game, yeah, we hit rock bottom, so to speak, in 2021. There was a fallout with Anthony Eddy, and the report came out of that. And in some ways, we've hopefully moved on. And I think Aoife's right to concentrate on the positives. There are a few other reports and all these action points about building up player numbers and the different clubs that are participating in youth female rugby or women's rugby. And they all seem to be trending in the right direction when you look at the latest reports. But I think Aoife's right. There needs to be people within the RFU that need to keep pushing the narrative constant, and have the right people in there to focus on it. Because it's all well and having good at these graphs showing the different growth numbers of different participation from girls, whether it be minis right up to women's rugby, and all the different factors that they have, number of female referees or number of female coaches, and all these, and they're all trending upward, but they need to be all harnessed and sort of a strong committee. That should be made up of strong people who have an interest in the women's game in Ireland. To keep that narrative going and keep it pushing, keep it pushed, because it just might eventually. My fear is that it just might get lost in the mire, as we get overly focused on the international team's results, I definitely think the RFU have made some positive changes, Aoife's touched on them. And it is a bit of a movable feast, if you look at the male game and you look at, say, Wales with the regions and their clubs, 25 years down the line, they're still not happy. And I'm not just picking on that, but we don't want to get into a situation where we don't, it, whatever the pinnacle in the club game in Ireland is, whether it be the Interpros or the Celtic Challenge that Steve had touched on, or will we have some sort of URC, that it is pushed and given, learn from the mistakes of other leagues and buy in and getting in, sort of. People have an affinity to these teams and getting it promoted within Ireland and getting it on media. I think if people are pushing that and can pull away from the mistakes, if they realise the mistakes, and I think everyone would give them a chance then. If the Celtic Challenge, which is the Wolfhounds and the Clovers, etc., if that doesn't work out, fine, and if it hybrids into something else, that's good. I think any decent rugby person who has the women's game at heart will realize they're trying, and I think once that's seen to be done, that it's that we're just not hopping from one issue to the next and not learning from it. I think that's where frustrations can build, and especially amongst the players first and foremost. But I think if there's an effort to try and just make whatever format's going to make this work better, the link between sort of the Munster leagues and the Leinster leagues into the AIL and then into whatever it be, the Celtic challenge, and then maybe URC hybrid sort of competition, and then obviously international. If we can say that there's a pathway, and the each calendar of those competitions are sort of fairly spread and gives all those players a chance. And then you can get buy-in from supporters because they'll see the Linda Zhuangs playing for whatever team it is, rather than, appearing in bits of club, bits of competitions all year. So I'm only picking Linda just because she's down the road in Rush, but and she's held in such high esteem by the girls in that area of North County Dublin that they're not sure when they'll get to see her. Now they will know they'll get to see her in the IRFU and the Six Nations, but it'd be great for them to be able to turn on the TV and know that, well, the Wolfhounds are playing, Friday night against some Welsh team, and that consistency is there and it's promoted in the right way. I think then it should start to improve. I know that's just a tip of the iceberg on trying to resolve issues within the women's game, but I think I would always try and be positive about it. And I think a lot of the benchmarks there, if you have set out on rectifying the errors that were found in the report, in the women's game in 2021, created by themselves, there are a few. I think if they start correcting some of those and they're trending upwards, as long as it's, as I said, that's the thing is it's not just to be information on a piece of paper. That's no good. It needs to be addressed, like down at club level, all the way through. All the support has to be there in action, not just, oh look, isn't that great? We've got 22% more female referees. Big swing. That's brilliant. But like, get that news out there. Don't have it on a graphs lost on somewhere on the IRFU website. That's my issue with it. It needs to be promoted and spoken about and have the right people who have it in heart to really promote the game to be out talking about this. So it will feed back to the general public. Oh yeah, well, there are a few and whoever's pushing this is really focusing on it rather than just finishing off. And yeah, rabbiting on, but like there's the meme with the well-known meme of the guy looking at the whiteboard and there's 100 red lines and he's looking at all these different bits of papers and he's trying to confuse some ways, even as somebody who's actively involved in girls youth rugby in Leinster. And obviously I go to the few the Women's Six Nations games that are in Ireland, and then that's not me singing my own praises. That's just I would be a fan. I would be not more than a passing fan. But even for me, it's still difficult to work out the female rugby calendar for a pro from August when the Interpro start to when the AIL final starts, which just happens to be on, which is great that it's on the day, same day as the men, the double header, but it's on the day after Ireland plays Scotland. So that just shows you some of the problems. It just wouldn't happen in the men's game. Still, we're still a long way to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so many points I could dig into, and I want to follow a bit of a structure because I got so much to dig into. But calendar is one. I don't know if I've written it down, but that's so important for me. Like, even think of AIL, and I spoke to Maeve Dealey. That podcast goes up tomorrow, Wednesday, I believe. And like, she's been one or two games for Blackrock this year as an Ireland international. That's all well and good. I know there's minutes managed. I know there's County Challenge and there's WXV, but it does. I do sometimes also feel like, as much as the IRFU need to sort their calendar, World Rugby need to sort their calendar a small bit as well and sit down with the various unions, because it's not as steep as it is for, say, the men's game. There is really only 10 stakeholders that you really need to tie in fully with, Ireland being one of them. Like, get it right. Like, just this is grade A level stuff. Like, this is level one, get that done. And Tom, you spoke about, or Tom and Eva both spoke about kind of the commerciality side of things, and I want to touch on that now, because the younger generation is so important. And I do feel like the visibility of women's rugby, men's rugby, TV and online is better than it ever has been, even if the results haven't always been great. So Eva, I'll start with you. Like, from your experience, you feel the structures are in place to maximize what is increasing eyes on the sport, increasing games on free-to-air television. And I know I've said it before, I'm not a big fan of Rugby Pass TV, but a lot of games, Energy AIL, County Challenge, Interprovincials on TG Car, and Six Nations games, they are there. They are available to be watched. Do you think we're getting the most out of that in some regard?
I think we are. I think having the games like that now on free to air, I think, does make it more accessible, and it is bringing in the people who wouldn't necessarily watch women's rugby. It's them turning on the TV of a Saturday or a Sunday, being like, oh, there's nothing on, and then stumbling across it and finding it, and then like bringing them into that world. And I think as well, what's really helped, I think, especially for the younger generation, is the whole rugby influencer side of things. So like your Stella Mills, your, you know, Amy Humphries and all those names, you know, bringing the kind of fun side to it all that I don't think we'd usually see with, obviously my role being in social media generally, in my day job, like you like, especially I work a lot with secondary school students, so knowing what they want to see and like seeing that these rugby influencers are producing that rather than it being actually the IRFU themselves. And I know you have to keep a certain level on their social media and whatnot and keep a certain level of professionalism, but I think it's that kind of fun is what people are looking for, to bring the younger people into the sport again. And I think, like you said, like I have my gripes as well with Rugby Pass. I think it's great to have another, you know, platform like that, but at the same time, putting the Celtic Challenge matches on it and putting the WXE matches on it, in all honesty, I didn't watch them. Like, I didn't want to be setting up another account. I didn't want to have to like log in every time I wanted to watch something. You know, it's so much easier to get your Virgin Media player, your RT player, your TG Cahir player, like up on your phone and it's there for you. So I think they probably didn't get the push on the WXV or the Celtic Challenge that they wanted purely because they were behind this, I don't want to say wall because it wasn't a paywall or anything like that, but that extra, like, do you know, like the mums and dads wouldn't be arse setting up an account for Rugby Pass, like, you know, as much as their younger kids might ask them to, they might be like, you know, or they might set up one and then forget the password or whatever. Like, so I think that was a bit of, I don't want to say a failure because that's a bit extreme, but maybe a downstep in what could have been a great opportunity to get the Celtic Challenge out there, a great opportunity to get the WXV out there. Do you know, like, even like, obviously it was probably awkward time-wise with Dubai and all that for the Irish fans, but like you look at when England were playing, like usually hundreds and hundreds of people would tune into those matches, thousands, you know, and I feel like they probably didn't even get those numbers over to Rugby Pass. So I feel like maybe that was a step back. But I think then, like, coming into Six Nations now and like having, as I said, the AIL finals now on free to air as well, I think that is also a step forward in an Irish point of view. So I think slowly but surely it is building in popularity. It's just if we can keep it going rather than, I suppose, stopping people from having access to it.
Yeah, definitely. And like the Rugby Pass point is something that I don't want to labour on, but like I think personally, you want to sell rugby, sell something like Sevens as well. And like that's exclusively on Rugby Pass. I know TNT have stepped in the last few weeks, but like that contract could be over at the end of the year. We don't know. The Olympics, it was almost impossible to watch Sevens at the last Olympics. I know Tokyo and COVID Olympics, and that was different. But like it's some of these things, as much as we can talk about the IRFU, some of it is out of their control. And even like when the Celtic Challenge was being set up, there was such a vast difference between production of, say, an Ireland game or a Welsh game or a game in Scotland. And it's like, just sit down, do the basics. Like, selling the basic parts, basic principles is the easiest part you'll do, and then go from there. And it feels like, oh yeah, sure, that'll do. It's like, no, it doesn't, not in this day and age, do you know? And I know, to be fair, anyone who covered Celtic Challenge, including yourself, Aoife, like, some of the stuff was brilliant. It really was, but like, they were hamstrung in other ways as well. You know, well, it was kind of, you know, cut short in some regard, but
yeah. But like, even I found like the match we covered, obviously it being the first match of the Celtic Challenge, it was always going to come with, you know, your pickups and whatever, but like we recorded a whole half of the match and it all went so well in our eyes, and then your man realized that Rugby Pass weren't even streaming it. So it was like, there's still teething issues, and look, this happens, and that is life and stuff like that. But it's just like, I was trying to find that medium that it is accessible, but it's like, it's not forcing people to sign. So like, that's why I found the Irish Rugby TV and how they stream the AIL matches. You know, when I did the Ballincollig Cook match a couple of weeks ago, I found that so handy because you could just go in straight onto YouTube and it's there for you, no messing. Same now with, say, Prez versus Christians now this afternoon. Like, that was on the Irish Examiner website and that was just straight in, press play, it was there for you. Do you know, there was no signing up, entering your details and ads and whatever. Do you know, I think, like, it sounds awful, making people make the effort will turn people off it. Do you know, they want something that's just there and then for them, you know. So yeah, if we can hopefully get it back to that way, and maybe even go, maybe lean towards more of the YouTube streaming rather than Rugby Pass, I think would make the difference and would encourage people to watch it more.
You're perfectly right, because like, there's so much on your phone these days, you're a click away from watching anything. or you're a click away from 150 stations on your TV. So like it's not been, it's prudent to make it access straightforward and simple, because that's how people get onto Netflix or how they get onto YouTube, and just make it as simple as possible and promote it, rather than, as you said, I know it might seem like people are lazy, but like here's two people anyway, there's three of us anyway with vested interests in the game. You know, might be a small cog in a very big wheel, but like it is awkward to, as you try and watch some of these games, that you'd be interested, because these are players I would have came across coaching against or whatever. It's just interesting to see how they're getting on from that point of view, and they don't make it easy, even though it is easy, but it just needs to be one touch just to promote that a bit more.
Yeah, because like I even found like it's the same with say the Olympic hockey qualifiers that were on a couple weeks ago. It was the same thing. It was on some random hockey website, and you had to log in, create an account, and it was all like in all honesty, like even talking to my boss, who'd be really into her hockey and stuff like that, like she even found it awkward. So it's like if you don't have the knowledge of a website, which like there's a lot of tech savvy people out there, but if you're just genuinely not tech savvy, that's where it starts, and then you just can't be arsed for the rest of them, do you know? So it's just trying to get them on a platform that is accessible to all, do you know, but is still a platform that is good quality, you know?
And that's where I think the AIL coverage in recent years has just stepped up a huge amount. And you mentioned before we came on, like the Club Scene podcast, for instance, like their coverage is fantastic. But there are a few have highlight reels going up every week. There is live streaming, they're promoting the live streaming. I remember the last day of the season, the last couple of years, they've had like a Twitter space thing. So there's basically reports from every game. Fantastic. These things are very easy, they're very basic. You know, YouTube is the most used, one of the most used websites in the world. Put it out there. Do you know what I mean? People can find Irish rugby much easier than, you know, even you mentioned the Munster Schools Cup final or Schools Cup finals, like you have to go to your province or you have to go to, and then this link and then this link. You know, make it as simple as you can. That's one thing that could probably be advised. And again, it's not all on the IRFU. They do it for the AIL, they do that part. That's the controllable. Other competitions is not their controllable, so it's out of their hands. But certainly, putting a few heads together wouldn't be any harm at sometimes. Tom, I do want to touch on the underage game, and you're involved in Leinster, as you said. I want to just touch on that because, you know, like from your perspective, how is the girls' game comparing to the boys' game at the moment? Because I know so often there's talks of, you know, smaller squads or, you know, walkover games even at the top level. So just from your perspective, what do you see? Do you think it's improving? Do you think the structures are good and competitive and harnessing talent the way that we know it can?
Yeah, well, in answer to your question, I'll park the AIL aside for 2 seconds. Into the broader question, I'd be quite biased. I think the standard is quite good. And anyone listening to this pod, I'd recommend if they're, you know, heading down to their local club or whether to, you know, catch an under 18 game down there, or catch a women's game in Munster or Leinster or Connacht, wherever you're listening from, because it's quality stuff. Like, I don't ref anymore since I did Mean E, but I know from reffing, standing out in the middle of a pitch, and I've refed under 18 games around Leinster, and I've refed under 16s, whatever the case would be, and it's as tough. And obviously, Aoife has played it, so she knows how tough it is. The hits are bloody real, and it's every bit as physical as the boys, boys' youths, you know, if we're talking about that. And I think I touched on it earlier on, there is a big growth in the numbers in female participation in minis all the way up through youths, and the Give It A Try program has been pretty good. That's, you know, run in conjunction with Aldi, is it Lidl or Aldi, trying to remember, that you know, getting new people to play rugby. So, you know, in the broader things, yeah, I, you know, if you're parents, yeah, bring your kid down to Give It A Try. It's great. And if you're a supporter, you know, our own club have tried to put games on before AIL games. You know, so the fans, when they're turning along to see, I know Skerries and Dolphin are in the same division in the AIL, they have to play soon to see who goes up or goes down. But we've a couple of under 18 games on before the AIL. You know, as the crowds start coming in, you know, for an AIL game, they're going to catch the last 15, 20 minutes of, and you know, I know everybody can be polite, but to a person, they're always pleasantly surprised by the quality of the rugby on show. You know what I mean? Which is sort of, I'm always saying, well, look, just come down more. So if anyone's listening, I'd say, yeah. In the broader scheme, in the bigger question, obviously the AIL, we're getting off track, is slightly lopsided. You've got three or four really good teams, and then you have four or five teams that are really struggling, even the field teams. So I know that's a different topic, but when I think the strength of the game, that pyramid from, as the bottom is getting definitely stronger. There's more female referees, there's more female coaches, there's more female players. So that the base of the pyramid is getting bigger. And it's just going back to what the first topic of the night is, how that's all harnessed by the RFU and the different provinces to make the top of the triangle stronger. I think, that's it. And what the top of the triangle looks like. We touched on a few samples, whether it could be URC or are they going to extend the Celtic Challenge, which IFA's had an involvement with. So it's I'd always be positive about promoting the game and getting people down to have a look at their local club. Like in Leinster as well, we've got like the Sarah Robinson Cup, which is sort of a regional competition under 18s between North East and South East, and the quality, that's quality above again. I've gone to some of the under 18 Leinster, v Munster games because I would have players would have coached that have gone up there and just seen how they're getting on, and the quality of that is excellent again. So, it doesn't matter if it's club or provincial or regional within your province. I'd always be, praising the quality of the play that's there. And I do laugh, as I said, just finished now, I do laugh at people being pleasantly surprised when they see it. But it's a good thing. You can't, I wouldn't try to be negative on that, as in, well, why should you be surprised and go down that route? But I think that's the message I'd give, who's somebody who's pretty much week in, week out would be looking at those sort of games, and I'd recommend people to catch them if possible.
I think we all suffer from a bit of that bias. I know I used to follow an awful lot of junior rugby here at home, and mid 2010s the standard wasn't as good as it is now, and I kind of got back to following. I was like, Jesus, this is a cracking game, and you almost forget. It's like, well, it's just the evolution of rugby in some regard. Like, just give it more time, it's going to improve. Like, it's J1s, not J4s. And we have that bias, but at least a club like Skerries, for instance, are doing their best to promote it, and having games before games is always a good thing, or afterwards or whatever. They're up proven techniques to get people to get eyes on it as well. And like, Eva, I might just come to you on it, because I spoke to Maeve Dealey. As I said, she came from Bondisloe, who have produced three internationals, but it's not a very typical background. We think typical rugby backgrounds, the rugby schools, that's what we keep thinking of. But you look at, say, the under 18 Ireland squad, the amount of clubs you might have even heard of, and that's definitely a good thing. The fact that the underage leagues, I suppose you can call it, at provincial level, are so diverse and they're so wide ranging that there's talent from all four corners of every province, never mind the country.
Yeah, and I think it's one thing that I think we're very lucky with. I think, like, especially in Cork, like a lot of our, like the likes of Dolphin now, or Conn, or like, well, it's mostly Dolphin and Conn. So, like, most of the Cork City clubs would struggle come in the men's side anyway, come say 14, 16s, whatever, because they're all taken by Christians, they're all taken by Preds, and same the Well as well. Like, the Well would be the same, they maybe wouldn't be able to field, or they wouldn't have. Or they'd have players who'd go away and they'd play with Prez, and then they'd come back because they're not getting picked by Prez. And I think it's always been like that. They've always struggled at that underage level. But I think because in the women's game, you're allowed to play schools and you're allowed to play club, I think that has built a really good structure. I think especially like with us, like we've got a couple now playing with Bantam Grammar. So they're getting that nearly semi-professional side of rugby that boys' school rugby would get. But they're still allowed to come down. They're still allowed to see all their friends. They're allowed to play club games. It allows squads to be bigger. And it also, I suppose, then allows for anyone who's maybe new to the game. Like, I think, looking at what Dolphin has built in the last 3 years, a lot of it has come from girls literally joining from nowhere. Like, they've either played a little bit of tag, or they've never played rugby before, or we did a thing with our kind of 16s, 18s last year. It was called Recruit 23 because they were trying to build. We were trying to build our 18 squad up to 23 players, And we kind of focused in on your TY Goshka Awards, where you have to take up like a new skill, is the kind of thing. So we were encouraging them to take up rugby. And I think we ended up getting, I'd say, about six players from it who are still playing a year later, you know, and they would have never, I don't want to say never picked up a rugby ball before, but they probably watch a little bit of rugby, but I've never felt comfortable enough to just like come down to a pitch and play. And I think that's one thing you think of, like women's rugby is so accessible that you genuinely can come from anywhere and you can just play it. Do you know, like you don't feel like you have to start like 6 years old and like know absolutely everything. You genuinely could have never touched a ball before, come in. And like, look at Sophia, who plays at U18s at the moment. She played rugby for a year and then made the Munster squad the following year. You know, so like it's such an accessible sport that like I think people think, like not that people think it's not, people can see it sometimes as like classist just from what you see on the men's side. But genuinely you look at the women's side and it's just all shapes, all sizes, all levels, all abilities. And we just go out and we have so much fun. And like genuinely it's so good seeing, like I've helped out now a little bit with like our 14s over on Christmas and stuff like that for like their little Christmas party. And like you can just see like it's not about the competition, it's not about winning, it's just all about kind of getting out there and having a bit of fun, you know, which I just love seeing, you know.
Yeah, no, it is fantastic. And like to kind of segue into AIL, because we'll talk to that in a second, like UL Bowls who are top of the table, okay, you can have your qualms about them and how they're kind of basically based on the college's reach and all that, but they've got players from Mayo, Cork, Galway, you know, Clare, Tipperary. Like not all of these places are known for rugby, you know, like okay, Clare have had like this mini revival in the last like couple of years, but you're seeing these non-traditional routes, and like it's not just a case of, I suppose people could kind of see it of, well, maybe it's a competition thing, and maybe it's, you know, just less clubs. It's not even as simple as that. It's just these clubs are giving it a go, and there's players from these backgrounds then who are just flourishing because they're just giving it a go. They're enjoying it, as you said, and maybe that's something you will never fully harness because you can just not recreate it. It's just there or it's not, and there is that element to it as well. But I do want to touch on AIL because it's probably the biggest juxtaposition in the women's game currently, and the fact that, you know, so many good players, so many international players who are Premier 15 standards or Premiership standard are on the books, but they're not playing. It's competitive at the top and competitive in the middle, but not at the bottom. So many different question marks. Aoife, I'll start with you. Like, just given all of this and how like form mightn't translate to call ups and what lopsided games and everything, just first and foremost, how do you feel the AIL stacks up as a league? And do you think that potentially we're underutilizing it and shortchanging it?
I think it's another tough one because like I was out again like at that Ballincollig Cup game there recently, and like there was so much talent on their pitch, do you know, and it was such a good game and competitive game, even though Cork was kind of near the bottom and like everything like that. It was actually a really tight game and it's a really enjoyable game to watch. And I think it's like the AIL is such like a nugget, like they could do so much with it, but their problem is they've lobbed them all into one. So like I was talking to one of the Cook coaches afterwards, and like he said himself, he was like, look, these are great games to have. You're playing the likes of Ballincollig, playing the likes of like Wicklow or Stonians or any of the kind of ones that are, I suppose, best of the rest compared to the top four. And he was just like, you know, that's all fine and good, but like us now going down to Railway in 2 weeks' time, you know, and being beaten 109-7 or whatever, he was like, how is that teaching anyone anything? You know, like we're getting hammered and Railway are having to run away with things, you know. How is that creating any improvement for either side? Do you know? So he was saying, like, and I think we, myself and Frawley, like, agreed with him, was like, do we need to look at maybe divisioning it and bringing in more teams or kind of trying to level the playing field a little bit like that to make it more competitive? So, like, you don't have players, you know, or even teams, sorry, going up to Ballincollig or going up to Railway, going up to Blackrock and just being absolutely like hammered, because like you don't want to see that either. Do you know, if you want the game to progress, you want to see tight score lines, you want to see interesting games, you know. You don't want to go to a match and then by halftime they're leading at 50 points and you're like, do I even need to be here anymore? Do you know, they're going to win anyway. So like even just to keep encouraging people going to games. And like even if you look at, I think me and Frawley were talking about it, like the whole AIL Junior Cup that was set up then. It was supposed to be this massive thing of there's going to be promotion relegation, and like we had Skibbereen had gotten into it, and we were delighted for them because Skibbereen had been doing so well in Munster, and they were had a really good team kind of building, and then that kind of fell. I'm sure they got into like a semi final or a quarter final or something last year, and that was grand and that was all good. And then it went into this season and the Junior Cup just kind of fell away to the wayside. Like it was being played out, but there was no kind of hype around it. And there was no, like, then the whole Celtic Challenge threw things askew. So, like if you look at UL Bolus, their seconds team was in that Junior Cup, but then they couldn't field a seconds team because all their seconds had to come up with their first team. And then this, like, our Munster League got delayed because of the Celtic Challenge. So we had to play out this random tens tournament just to fill the gap. And you know, it's just like, as like Fiona Hay said when the Celtic Challenge got like announced, like Bowes lost 16 players to the Clovers or whatever. So it's just like, how is that supposed to make you want to watch the AIL if the players you were looking to hope to see are gone, you know? So it's like, it is the scheduling, is it like divisioning? Do we need to just like look at the thing as a whole and just revamp it completely? Like, how do we make it more competitive? Like, I think that's the main thing, is we need to make it competitive to make it interesting, you know, like bring in promotion relegation. Because like even when I was talking to Rolly about it that day, it was like, you know, it's all well and good just playing it out, but like the winners win, but like what about the rest of them? Do you know, like, oh, they're just still in it next year. Do you know, you need to bring a bit of jeopardy into it just to make it a little bit more interesting. Because then there's the whole thing of there's really, really good games there, and just like, I hate saying no one cares, but it's just like you don't want it just to be there for the sake of being there, you know? So it's just, it's trying to make it competitive and make it a product that people want to watch more than anything. Because like the games are so good, like that Cork Ballincollig game I was at was class, and like there was a good couple of Ballincollig fans out there, and I think I looked and afterwards there was like 3,000 people I think watched it online now or something like that. So that's really good numbers. But like, how do you make every single game like that, you know, where like make it that like everyone wants to stream every game and stuff like that? So it's like, how do we build on it? And like, I know them getting the Aviva for the final is great, but like you already know from like day one who's going to be in that final. Do you know what I mean? It sounds awful, but like there's no excitement to leading up to that like semi-final, quarterfinals, you know, kind of thing. Like it's, you know, the four that are going to be in those last couple of games. So it's like, how do you create the atmosphere that people will want to watch every single game, so that you're like, okay, your fantasy league, like who players would you pick, or like what way would you think the table would go? You know, you know it's going to be the top, like if you know it's going to be Railway, Blackrock, Bowes, and maybe Belvoir kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? And like chop and change and stuff. And then obviously then it's like you see Setonians giving walkovers or Wicklow giving walkovers. So it's like, you know, do they, like, it's hard because then like you want to put respect on the game, and like of course it's shite when you don't have a team to play, like, but you know, it's also AIL, so you should be pushing to get teams to play and stuff. So it's just trying to figure out how to make it like profitable in a way, like, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing. And like, it is great to see that underage and minis is flourishing. But if there is then a generational, not generational gap, but a gap, then once you hit seniors rugby and it's affecting juniors and AIL, then there is a need for reform. And there's no other way to put it. Like, there's just need for actual reform. And even just like it's seen mentioned here in the notes by one of you, like, it's probably changing too often then as well. Last year's AIL final was in December. This year it's in March. Like, it went from being in probably not in a great spot in December, to be fair, but like now it's in March or April or whatever. Like, it's in the middle of the Six Nations or right after the Six Nations. Like, that doesn't help anyone either. Like, which way are we going with these things? You almost have to ask as well. And so I might just get you to come in here because, again, so many great points that Aoife mentioned in terms of walkovers, lopsided competitiveness. And yes, there's pros, there is the streaming and there's things like that. And the top end games are great. I'm sure the final, if it plays out, it might need to be a little bit more competitive than the actual league itself. If it plays out that way, it'll get eyes because people will want to see it. But where do you see the IRFU going with it, I suppose? Like, what would you like to see to help tweak the AIL and even as it trickles down, as Aoife mentioned, to juniors rugby, for instance?
Yeah, well, I think, yeah, I do have obviously, I say this now as not an expert, but as a fan of, and I repeat that, as a fan of the women's game, and not an expert. I don't have the answers, and it's a male voice trying to give my tuppence worth on the women's AIL. So take with a grain of salt or not. I can only speak as a fan of the game and as somebody with an interest in it. The reality is, yeah, I think the positive side of it is, I think Leinster, like, for example, there's about five divisions of women's rugby, and you mentioned UL Bohemians having all these players from all over the province of, and up and down from Clare to Tip and Mayo, you look at the five divisions in women's rugby in Leinster, it's from Dundalk to Wexford and everywhere in between. Every town has got it. So I think that's quite strong. I do have a feeling that the bottom four that's in the AIL is a lot closer to that level and really should be playing in that level. Your Stratonians and your Cooks and your Wicklows. And Ballincollig is definitely the best of the rest, so to speak. But then down in Munster, you got your Killarneys and stuff. So I think there's a lot of good clubs within the province. And the AIL is just so lopsided. And if you touched on it, you see the 100 results or the 88.5 or this, and that does nobody any good. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter if it's youth rugby or even women's rugby at a provincial level. It's for a reason. But you look, anyone can go onto the Leinster website, domestic, and look at the women's results from Division Premier or the Division 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or look then in Munster in Division 1 or 2. There's obviously teams struggle. That's cyclical. It happens, but the games are a lot competitive. You don't tend to see some of the big scores that you do in the AL, and that is a real problem. My own feeling on it, just my own feeling in it, is that the some sort of URC or an extension of the Celtic Challenge that we're familiarized now with the Wolfhounds and the Clovers that are made up of the four provincial teams, maybe the way forward, and that some of those clubs like Stratonians and Galwegians and stuff come back into some sort of a more balanced AIL. You're always going to get stronger teams, and the likes of the players that's playing for Bowes and Blackrock and Belvedere and Railway would be spending a lot more time playing at the level above, call it a URC type level, because you want eyeballs in this. And I know one of the coaches personally that manages one of the AIL teams. I used to coach along with me, and he struggles to get a team out. He's playing in the AIL, struggles to get a team out on a week by week basis, and just that stress that's involved with that. It's bad enough at my age group. Jesus, can you feel the team? But like, if you're AIL, when you're getting penalised and it's in the paper, you've forfeited 5 points, and you don't want to travel down. But also, he has players living in his locality where he's based that travel to the south side to play for the other club. So, there is an issue there. And again, I'm not probably going to make friends with some of the Dublin clubs in the AIL, but I'm going to say it anyway. They tend to hoover up a lot of the talent. And I don't know whether that's right or wrong, but I would have great club for the, I would have great time for the likes of Wicklow. We've got a hugely strong minis under 12. They won Leinster for the last 2 years running at under 18. They're still in the Premier League. They've produced an awful lot of players. And it saddens me to see them struggle and losing players to other clubs that don't have, and I have to read, don't have youth programs, don't have or not promoting youth teams within theirs. They've got the women's team and more luck to them. I'm sure somebody from Railway would listen and go and listen to your man giving out about Railway. But it is what it is, as far as I'm concerned. You know what I mean? If you're going to be a club, like whether you're be Dolphin or and you're promoting from minis all the way up, and all your players are getting hoovered up by Bows, I have an issue with that as well. So there is that problem as well. Aoife is far more better placed to try and work out how that can be corrected. I don't know, but it is a problem in Dublin anywhere where two or three of the clubs that don't really have youth programs and youth teams have really strong women's teams because they're just hoovering up all the talent. And I don't know how the RFU addressed that, but that is the reality of the situation. You've got a completely lopsided AIL, and we shouldn't have a competition where we sort of, as Aoife says, know what the potential finalists will be, or semi-finalists definitely, from September, before a ball is even kicked. And you very rarely get an upset, such as the disparity between the sort of top four and the other five. And I do believe the other five are a lot closer to the Premier Division in the provinces. whether it be Munster or Leinster. So I really don't know where the line should be cut or where the players that are playing for these the big four AL clubs should be spending most of the time playing. I do have sympathy for them as well. Like, you know, they're in really four competitions. You know, when you look at the women's Interpro start in August, and then they're straight into the AIL, and then they lose players starting at the end of December, is it, to the Celtic Challenge, and then you've got the Six Nations rolling on after that. And we even touched on point one, saying the Ireland Scotland game is on the day before the AIL final. So we're not seeing the best of the players. You know, I'm sure there'll be a few players belonging to the clubs involved in that Six Nations game. So it's unfair to those clubs as well that are playing week out. You know, I'm criticizing on one hand, but I feel sorry for the other because they're losing players left, right, and centre to these different rival competitions. So I don't really know what the answer is. I'm only my frustration and annoyance is just on behalf of those clubs and those players as well, because it is frustrating that it's, and I know they're trying to work it out. They are trying to work it out to see what the best calendar that they can get. But a lot of it is that it's just getting the right calendar, that we get to see the quality players as much as possible, and then you get sort of an affinity. Even maybe Aoife, who's commented on the games, might be able to explain to me. Like, you see some of the players that are playing for the Wolfhounds. Obviously, you have Munster-based players that are playing in Dublin, playing for the Wolfhounds, and you have some Leinster-based players that are playing in Munster, playing for the Clovers, and then they play against each other for the Interpros, and they're in different clubs for the AIL. So, you know, you could have a different, if you're in the front row like Linda Jushan, you could be playing against your teammate and playing with them the following month and playing against them. I know that's rugby, but it seems to be a lot more pronounced generally in the men's game. Jeremy Loughnane knows he's going to be going down against Tadhg Furlong, and if they meet in Irish camp, they meet in Irish camp, but he's not running into him or playing with him every second or every quarter of the season. So I don't know how they came to that situation of picking players that from these the Wolfhounds and the Clovers.
Yeah, there's definitely an identity issue there, and people aren't, and there's transparency issue there because people did look at those squads and think, "What is going on here?" Do you know what I mean? And like that's fair enough, and I could understand why I was one of those as well. I should probably add, and that you can clip this up and you can laugh, whatever. Should probably stand up for the Dublin clubs that you were accusing there because that is happening in the AIL across. It is. It's probably more of a city thing. I think it's fair to say UL are going into, you guessed it, UL to get players. The likes of Blackrock and Wood Railway, they're going to UCD, they're going to DCU. I know with like Corinthians men's team and Wigan's women's team, they're going into NUIG and GMIT. Like it's just happening. Like I know of a lad, I spoke to him from, he's from the Midlands and he went to college in Galway and he wasn't that long there and he got a text off one of the coaches who happens to be coaching one of the AIL teams in Galway being like, do you want to pop down and play for us? Like it's the way it's going and that's probably an unavoidable issue, but probably should be important to note that it is probably a city thing more than a Dublin thing. As much as I do like an old swipe at them every once in a while, it's important to be a little bit transparent as well. But definitely great points made there on that. And if it's something that can be addressed, I don't know if it can. Is there an identity issue potentially with the Celtic Challenge? Potentially, I think if you ask people, would they rather see, say, UL Bose and Blackrock or a Dublin and a Limerick or whatever it may be representing, I think people might be more inclined to say yeah. I think just the idea that it's Wolfhounds and Clovers, like even just no disrespect to the manufacturer of the kits, but like the kits didn't look great either with the half and half. Like just I think so again, it's kind of just do the basics right. And that's probably one of the issues there. But I know we're a little bit tight for time. Because we have to talk about the international game as well, so I want to discuss that. I to be fair, we kind of touched on provincial. Like, if anyone thinks it's skipping over, I kind of touched on that there with linking in with AIL and the Interpros is probably the high point in some ways of the women's game. Like it's sold well, it's competitive, it's run off at a good time of year, good attractive rugby. We'll mark that as a positive. We'll mark that as a net positive, anyways. We'll move on to international and like it's where there's kind of been that steep decline. I think Tom, you mentioned at the start of the show from winning Grand Slams to to missing out on World Cups. And Aoife, I'll start with you on the international picture, because to discuss talent as we have, do you think the current national side is reflective of the talent? And that's I'll just emphasize, I am thinking about the call-ups, the squad makeup, the contract in question, which obviously does affect selection, whether you like it or not, and the demographics of the team, which is generally younger. Do you think it is reflective? Do you think we're getting the most out of it on the grandest stage?
I think we are. I think with obviously the changeover in management and coaching and whatnot this year, and kind of obviously the report coming out and things being kind of attempted to be fixed, and you know, this is like, I suppose, a new wave of Irish rugby or women's rugby in Ireland or whatever, you know, this is the new era they're trying to create, you know. And I think the call-ups, I think this year, and looking at the team, is quite youthful, which I think is a good thing in some ways, because some of the players, like you look at Ruth Campbell getting her call up, like she was phenomenal in the Interpros, and then she was like playing for, I know she's playing with Clovers, which I thought was a bit strange to have a random Leinster player just in amongst everything, but she was unbelievable. Like I was commentating on that first game with Ciarán Óbil, and like we were like the Ruth Campbell Appreciation Society, like we could not help but talk about her. She was unbelievable in the air. Unbelievable physicality, like not afraid to get in, poach that ball. I think that call up was really well deserved. Then you look at like WXV, which feels like it's been about 100 years ago, you know. And like I know, obviously we ended up in tier three and probably wasn't as competitive as we kind of hoped it would be. And you know, great to get a couple of wins, great to get that confidence back in ourselves, and I suppose confidence for like the nation to know that we can win games when we want to win games, you know. And like I think that was great, but it also gave a chance for the likes of, you look at Sarah Delaney, you know, how like she was literally bang on 18 years old coming into camp and scoring those two or three tries that she scored coming on, and you know, giving her that opportunity now to continue, not seeing the WXV as like, right, we tried out all these players but we're not going to go use them. The fact that they've kind of continued on and allowed them into camp, allowed them into that Six Nations squad, I think is great to see, and it shows that they're putting faith in the players that they have now rather than going back and just choosing the same team sheet they've gone with forever kind of thing. They're kind of really opening it up. Another one, I've watched her for years, Chisholm from Bowes. I just think she's an absolute baller of a player, and I never understood why she wasn't making Munster squads until this year, and I just thought she was she I she's amazing. Like I think she's such a class player, so to see her finally get that Irish call up as well, I think was really, really deserved. Obviously then you've got like Enya Breen is back. You know, hopefully she stays injury free. I know she's had a bit of a niggle, so hopefully she's back and she's back for good. You look at Hannah O'Connor, so they're still kind of interweaving that, I suppose, I was gonna say old age, but that's wrong. Just like experience. That experience.
Glad you said it.
I know that experience kind of amongst it, even in like say even the training panelists, like you look at like the Kirry Patties from Connacht, you know, like they've been doing really, really well. I met their mum actually, and I think the youngest daughter up at a women in rugby thing ages ago, and like they're doing, her children are doing so well between Connacht, and they're making Irish squads, and you know, though they are still young and they may only be training panelists, but it's great that they have a block of players as a training panel, so that like they're getting the opportunity to be in that setup and learn that setup and kind of build on for their future. And you know, then obviously in the training panelists and having like Maeve Ogan Hannah, as I said, having that experience kind of to interweave it, you know, I think they're very much building something, and it's, I think it's a very positive thing to see being built. But I think this year, I think we're gonna miss Derval. Like when I heard she did her ACL, I literally, when I tell you, I welled up a little bit. You know, I met her over the summer, herself and Enya actually, and I was chatting to them, and I was just like, you got, so I got so excited about this whole like Clovers and Wolfens thing, and I was like, great, we get to see Derval doing what Derval does best. And then obviously she did the AIL, and she's been great. In fairness, she's still involved, and she's still, you know, doing her little bit of commentary and punditry. Oscailga, in fairness to her as well. But I think she'll definitely be missed, because you know, she just had that little bit of a spark. Like there was nothing like Derval couldn't do, like in fairness to her. Like she's even taking classic golf. I met her up at a golf event and she's even unbelievable at golf, and I was like, for heck's sake, is there anything you can't do? Like, So I do think they're very much in, not to, use a Taylor Swift connotation, but they're in their reputation era. Like, they've been torn down. Like, last year they were so upset. Like, even talking to like Nicola Friday after the games, like, she was in tears after that last match. Like, I was nearly in tears talking to her, like, interviewing her. And I think they were so torn down between how, I don't want to say how badly it went, but it didn't go great for them, obviously, but like how badly it went for them, how the media tore them apart, how, everyone had their opinion on things, and some good, some bad kind of thing. And it was all just a bit of a storm. And I think it affected players probably a lot more. Thus the reason a good couple stepped away and stepped back. But I think this is their opportunity to do something really positive, and I really think they're kind of stepping that way. And I'm hopeful going into the Six Nations that they do get the opportunity to kind of show up and show people, like, we are still here. We are still a team. We're not going to let everything that happened in our past tear us down,
And I think, to their credit, I think the vibes are good. We might just touch on WXV3 in a few minutes, but like the fact they won that, the fact that Scott Beamond, I was told he was heavily involved in the Celtic Challenge. Like, he was not just saying, "Oh yeah, go off and play, and I'll see you at the end of the month." Like, he was heavily involved in terms of how they wanted them to play, how they're being coached, going to some of the training sessions, going to the games. Like, that makes a difference. When the last few years has been sometimes septic in some regard, that makes difference. Like, to just clear it, and then the fact that he's got this wealth of experience as well obviously makes a difference. And we might touch on that later. But Aoife, you made a great point about the media and how it was kind of dug into them, and probably the most unfair bat that was used to hit them was sevens, because they're not the same sport. And I alluded to this yesterday in the interview with Anna Kaplis. Like, it shouldn't be seen as a pathway. It shouldn't be seen as a rival. It's different sports where there might be some interchangeability, but it can sit alongside. We've got the players, we've got the athletes, especially for sevens. So Tom, I might just come to you. Like, on sevens, given their recent success, it's probably not a bad thing that we have that. And yes, it's not ideal that we can't really see the games, and it's not ideal that, people might say it's taken away from the 15s, but like, they're getting to Olympic Games. That's going to put eyes on women's rugby, and no matter what way you shape it. So the sevens, I suppose, stick, the seven scapegoat could probably be parked now, because it's shown fruits of the labour.
Yeah, absolutely. To just find back to a point that Aoife eloquently made about how the Six Nations went for the 15s, and how the RFU can learn from it. What I mean by that is the girls from the 15s got absolutely torn into by the media last year, and people who would not write about women's rugby from one end of the year to the next were all of a sudden experts and just turning into these. The quality of this, and it was very much a case of, let's throw all the baby out with the bathwater and everything else. Everything was wrong with the game. And then the same media, when you look at the sevens down in Perth, what they did with the gold medal, all of a sudden it's brilliant. So if the RFU can learn anything from this, and switching back to the original points that we made at the tonight, about the RFU, the things going right, all these after the report was done, when sort of the shit hit the fan in 2021. And all these reports and markers and benchmarks that the RFU are trying to hit in the women's game, we need to constantly, it goes back to what I said, we need to constantly get those points that we can't be at the we, as in the royal we, anyone that's interested in the women's game, at the whims of the media, that it's either all shit, oh wow, look at the girls down in Perth winning the gold medal, and there's nothing in between. And the RFU have to sort of take back the narrative away from the media. Or at least try anyway. It's a difficult beast to do, because it's all very much results. And look, the girls have won a gold medal down in Perth, which is absolutely brilliant. Like, I botched it myself. That's not taking it away from them. I'm sort of talking at the broader picture of trying to take the narrative back about promoting the women's game as a whole, and that it's not all, losing 48-0 or whatever it was to France when they played with 14 women for fucking 70 minutes. Or scoreless or whatever it was against Wick or against England, and then the opposite of that is in the sevens. But yeah, I look, the sevens has been great to promote the women's game, and that's women's rugby overall. And it can be used as a pathway for to get more players involved in the game. Do you know what I mean? We spoke about earlier on about players rocking up and not having picked up a ball. And sometimes in the summer, the sort of seven or touch or tag is as much a way as get people into the sport. And we got players in like that. Even touched on a few players to play for Dolphin. We got players come in the summer to play touch or tag, and now they're playing tight head prop under 18 because, you know, I want a bit of contact, you know. And that's the beauty about women's sport is you're right, it's not all go to the right school and go to the right club. It's literally all backgrounds. And that's one real positive that should be harnessed, and it's not a negative. So I think there are a few sort of need to take the narrative back from either the yin and the yang of us of how the women's game is portrayed, taking the opposite ends of the result of the Six Nations last year and how the sevens are going, and looking forward to the Olympics, because nobody, as you said, not nobody, but it's difficult to watch these sevens games around at the wrong time or dislike that. Everyone who will watch the Olympics now in Paris, a completely new audience will be watching it. So I in answer to your question, you're it should be it's a good thing, and the positivity that's going to be harnessed from the women's, in particular we're talking about the women's in the sevens in Paris for the Olympics. There are a few have to harness that positivity and go well, because if they've a bunch of they've a team there that's can go really well. And you know, I think they finished what, fourth the first year, fifth, and they're sitting about sixth now in the World Seven Series. Also they need to get the finger out about getting the World Series to Dublin. That's another thing that can help the game. It would be fantastic.
Thank you, Tom. I'm just delighted someone said it because I've been thinking that for a few years.
Oh, it should be. Jeez, I'm getting old and grey thinking about it. It's just anyway. Look, I did completely feel sorry finishing off. I just did feel sorry for some of the girls that Aoife was talking about on the team last year for the 15s, and how they were sort of pulled apart unfairly. And you know, I think the positivity of the at the moment that's coming out. Obviously, there's changes that's happened behind the scenes with coaching and different pieces that has improved. So it's still difficult against England and France. There's no question. You know, that's not our benchmark at the moment, and nor it should be. We shouldn't be flogged against those two. I mean, shouldn't be flogged if we don't do well against those two, but definitely Wales and Scotland. And obviously, looking at the challenge, Celtic Challenge, the two Irish areas, for want of a better word, have been doing quite well against the two Welsh and the two Scottish teams. So I'm hoping, yeah, I'd love it nothing better more than, you know, for the girls to come back and you know, put a bit of egg back on some of the media's face that sort of tore them to shreds at the end of last year. And I would say, just as an overall thing, just finishing off, you know, we have under 18 teams, as in the Irish under 18 teams, regularly play England in festivals and stuff like that, and they're always good competitive games and close. So obviously something's happening between, and we obviously know England have a professional setup and some of our good players are over there, and that's hard to replicate here. But the point of being is the talent at underage, under 18 into under 19 against our counterparts in England is there, and the results over the last few years would see that. Good close games between Ireland played England there a couple of weeks ago, and it was a good close game. The year before it was in England, and it was, you know, England got a try in the last minute to win the game. So it's not like it, you know, there's a lot of good work going back to that pyramid. There's a lot of good work underneath it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'll be going to the Scotland game anyway, up in Ravenhill. I think we have a game on the same day ourselves as the game in the RDS, so I'm not sure if I can get to it, but I'll be watching them with interest and hoping they really do well.
And I might just move up and jump off that positivity because I feel like this is a chance to be a very good year. Now, obviously, when you say that, there is obviously the chance of downfalls and whatever, but like Celtic Challenge, the Wolfhounds won that. That's a good start to the year. And I understand there was the competitive element. And yeah, we're focused on the positive amount. Good opportunity there. They're back with three home games, three. Maybe not winnable home games this year, but certainly more winnable than last year. Like, you know, that English team is insane, as I'll always mention. I'll mention it in the the tournament preview as well at the end of the week. They're an insane team. There's a chance to take a result there. You're moving the games around again. It's RDS, Musgrave Park or Virgin Media Park, as I should be calling it, and Ravenhill as well. Like
Kingspan.
Kingsland, yeah, like Kingsland Ravenhill, I suppose. I have to call it that too. But like you're moving games around. That's a feel good factor. The Olympics, that is huge. No matter who you are, everyone seems to tune into the Olympics. That's a huge part. There's WXV, hopefully WXV2 at the end of the year, which will be in South Africa, I believe. And then from that, better TV times, better chance for people to watch it. Maybe there's a bit of success. You know, I would like to see something where, because obviously it'll be on October, November time that the RFU really push it, you know, because that's a prime time where people get back onto their sofas to watch rugby. There's a chance for this to be a really big year. Now, Six Nations may not be perfect. There's a new coach in there, still takes time. These things take time. But there is that chance for success. And if I might just finish on you coming into the Six Nations, like we'll discuss, you know, how we see it going and the different teams and whatever in a different podcast. But it does feel like this is not a free shot, but a chance to build on the success from WXV3, a chance to not inspire. I don't want to belittle the players or anything like that, but just build and show a sign of progress because their stated aim is getting to that World Cup in England, where that'll be essentially half a home World Cup there because it's going to be in England. And, you know, show that we're turning the corner and then we'll turn around, maybe have this conversation in 2 years' time and say, well, look at how brilliant the underage pathways are going. And now we're starting to see it replicated. So this is a good opportunity to clean slate, get a bit of positivity back, even if it's not results, but just a bit more positivity in there.
Yeah, like I think the Six Nations, like you know, it's going to be England. Like it's written. You know, they are the most professional setup. You know, they have their own, you know, Premier 15s and all that jazz. So they're miles ahead. And look, it is what it is, and all that jazz. But like, I think this is a really good opportunity for us to show our competitiveness again. I think, like I said, with the WXC, with the Celtic Challenge, like getting those wins under our belts, like can show that we can play and we can win games, you know. And I think this Six Nations, it's a really good opportunity to kind of put ourselves back on the map a little bit. Like we have an opportunity to play England in Twickenham. Like that doesn't happen. Do you know what I mean? In the women's game, that does not happen. So that is another, like, and you know, seeing England fans now, they're hoping that it'll be another complete sellout. So like, you know, or more like records beaten for number of tickets bought for a women's game and all that jazz. So this is like women's rugby are in a really good place. And I think this year is our opportunity to kind of make our mark, put our hand up and be like, right, we might not be the most phenomenal team in the world, but we are building something. And it is something that in a couple of years' time, we could be as competitive as France or Italy or whoever. Like, do you know what I mean? Like it's small baby steps. But I think we're officially, hopefully, coming to some sort of a right direction, you know. And like, look, this happens every so often. You have like that, you hit rock bottom, but you have to come back up at some stage. So I think this is our first step. And like, even though like we may not get the wins we hope to get, but I think as long as we're there and we're competing, you know, I think that's the most important thing. And that we're there in the first place, you know, we didn't let last year tear us down completely, you know, like we still have faith in ourselves more than anything, you know. And the fact that I think we have the youth coming through again as well, like I think that will be really, really interesting to see and see like the differences that makes. So I think it's going to be an interesting one for sure.
Absolutely. And like you think of how the coaching staff, like they don't have a lot of time to embed their new systems and whatever. Fair enough. But look at some of the coaches there that they're highly thought of. I know Dennis Fogarty is really highly thought of. Scott Beamont, like say what you like, he may not be the most well-known name, but like he spent what, the guts of 10 years with the Red Roses during their high point. I think there's a wealth of experience there. I say he's a pretty good coach as well. A lot of people talking up Declan Danaher. A lot of people talk up Niamh Briggs, who's moved into the under-20s. Apparently, it's a perfect fit for her. She's supposed to be phenomenal in that role at Munster, similar role at Munster as well. And like, there's good coaches, there's good players. There's probably a little bit of a good vibe. Now, they do play France first, which I think even the players themselves would admit is not ideal. You know, you probably want a nicer start, maybe a home start, like they had 2 years ago. But it's something. It's hopefully be a step in the right direction. Hopefully they'll start moving forward and go from there. If you're to give any predictions, or maybe not predictions, but stay off predictions for now, that'll be at the end of the week. Any hopes for this championship and for the rest of 2024, what would it be? And I'll come to you first, Tom. If is there anything that you want to see done, or is there any kind of, high points that you want to see hit possibly?
Yeah, first of all, I'd like to see good numbers turn up in the games, and for people to go out there and support the women's national team. I think that's, something you take for granted. I've been in RDS before or Kingspan since the 2 years to me, and you can sort of get a mixed crowd. You get a lot of diehard rugby faces that you tend to see different circles all the year. So I think I'd hope. The public would get out and at least get to one game and support them. That would be important. I think that would feed into the team as well. Because yeah, last year was very difficult, and I think the talent is there, as Aoife said, just that it is a step, and I think people should look at this as a sort of a, I don't want to call it a 2, 3 year, 4 year project, but it takes a while to get out of that cycle we were in last year. But I think they've made some positive steps this year, given the players have played together a little bit more as well, leading up to this with some of the competitions that we've been in, and that cohesion might be there a bit more than maybe it was before. So hopefully these all sort of stem into, giving some positivity around the game. I'll be giving it anyway. But I just, yeah, I'd like the public out to support them a bit more in the three locations the games are in, and they'll see some good rugby. It's pretty quality stuff. And England and England especially, and France are two really good quality teams, and two of the best in the world. And even to see those teams, I know that they're away this year, but I think people won't be disappointed if they go along to these games, and they're great bloody value. Do you know what I mean? Great value to go to these games. So on a simple thing, I just say, yeah, get out and support the team. Just even the one game that's in your area, just go to and support the girls.
Absolutely. Aoife, the same to you. What would you like to see? It can be Six Nations, like WXV, Olympics, whatever. What would you like to see this year and in terms of progress?
Well, obviously, I'd like to see them win the gold in the Olympics because I would be there. So, that would be a very cool thing. Well, I'm going to the quarterfinals. So, hopefully, they make it to the quarterfinals and I get to see them play there. That would be quite cool. But no, I think for me, like Tom said, like getting crowds out, I think, at games and kind of, I suppose, getting that respect back nearly in a sense, like how torn down we were last year. And then there was all this drama about people bringing things to games and there was signs and there was things outside of it that were starting to, I think, affect what was going on the inside as well. So I think I'd love a bit of a drama-free, Six Nations in the nicest way possible. And look, I know you can't guarantee things, but like, I just really want them to just go out there and just enjoy it. I think last year was so tough for the players. Like you could see it mentally took a toll on a couple of them, and I think it ultimately made decisions for a couple of them that probably they weren't even thinking of making, but they were just like, no, I had enough. And like, I just want it to be enjoyable for them, enjoyable for the fans, and just bring people into the sport more, because like it's such a good sport. Like everybody loves rugby. Do you know what I mean? Like if you can get so much behind men's game, like look at the women's game. Look at how some of them only took up rugby in college and here they are playing for like the international team. Like it's such an accessible sport on the women's side of things that I don't think people realize. And I think it's just support is the main thing. I think they need the support and they, just that they enjoy it and that the players want to continue playing for Ireland, I think is the main thing. We're starting to build a really good squad, and if we could keep it that way, that would be fantastic.
The idea of goals in Paris seems quite nice as well, but probably Antoine Dupont will find a way to spoil that as well in both codes. So I mightn't get too far ahead of ourselves. But we will leave it at that. We've probably gone a bit over time anyways. And thanks to Aoife, to Tom for going through every fibre of the women's game in Ireland. And there is reason for positivity. There's reasons for negativity, but there's reasons for positivity as well, and that's always a good sign. We'll be back tomorrow with our last interview of the My Life in Rugby series with current Ireland international Maeve Dealey, and probably known sods law. She'll probably be on the bench or something for Saturday after interviewing her. There's the interview with Anna Kapras, which went up yesterday. We'll have a tournament preview, which Aoife is scheduled to join me on as well, along with Patricia and Chrissy and Leslie, all fan favorites of this podcast. But as always, thanks home to everyone for listening. I hope you're enjoying our coverage of the Men's Six Nations. I hope you will enjoy our coverage this week of the Women's Six Nations. And if you do like what you see or hear, please do subscribe. There's been loads more to come across the rest of the season. You can find all our links below as well. But for now, until next time, take it easy.
Sports Social Podcast Network.